Blog Talk Radio.
Of books, history, wisdom, knowledge, philosophy, and metaphysics that have been handed down to us through the centuries from the dawn of time before the digital age. Listen at freedomizerradio.com or at augustbooks.com. Call in with your thoughts and comments at 319-527-6208. Press 1 to join Ed live on air. And now, here is our host, Ed August.
Out there, here we are again in central Arizona, and another beautiful day. It's somewhere in the mid-90s, and of course that's the swan song of the hot temperatures. It's going to go down into the 80s pretty soon, usually after Halloween. It just falls like a rock around here, you know. So lots on my mind to talk about. Just trying to tank up on some coffee so I can sound more logical to you. But I don't know, I've kind of got myself into a semi-nocturnal arrangement where I'm staying up until, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and then sleeping until noon, stuff like that. So, I don't know, a few cobwebs I'll push out of the way, gently push out of the way so I can do a good job with you guys today. I was looking at the chance we have some callers. I love to have some callers on here, and right now I can't tell if there's anybody much that's listening. And I'd like to encourage that. Here's our live number announcement, because that really is a wonderful way for me to share the time that I have on the air with you. If you have opinions to express, you have questions to ask. For example, if you're interested in a tarot reading or a quick look at your astrology, if you're in the middle of some kind of decision that you need to make, or you know, you want to know a little bit more about your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. So here's our live number now.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
Wow, there you go. Too bad this isn't a 3-minute commercial or something, huh? So anyways, I was looking at astro.com this morning during my Ed August Psychic Astrologer show, which is a 30-minute show that's on Tuesdays and Fridays, also here on Blog Talk Radio. Of course, this is the Freedomizer Radio portion of Blog Talk Radio. We're one of the most listened to sectors or sections of Blog Talk, and I'm so glad that the owner of this part of Blog Talk Radio has given me this forum to speak on some issues. The other people on this site are a little bit more socially aware, a little bit more political, you know, and economics and stuff like that. And I kind of bring up the rear here with the metaphysics and sometimes the stuff about books and collectibles and some of the books that I've written and everything. But gee, I will try to hold my end up here so that everybody's happy. And I'm looking here now at www.astro.com. These are the current planets. The sun is in 1.5 degrees of Scorpio, and the moon is in the latter part of Sagittarius. It's going to go into Capricorn overnight. Mercury is in 11, almost 12 degrees now of Scorpio. Venus is in its own sign of Libra. That's because Venus owns Libra. That's also Taurus. And Mars is also in Libra. That's nice. And Jupiter, hey, look at this. Jupiter's in 3 degrees of Scorpio. Jupiter's traveling, you know, rather slowly. It takes 12 years to go around the whole chart, to go around the entire the zodiac of 12 signs, 12 houses. And the sun is traveling 1 degree per day. That's how it ends up being 360 per year. And here we go. So Jupiter is in 3 degrees, sun is in 1.5 degrees. In 1.5 to 2 days from now, the sun is going to transit Jupiter. It's transit of Jupiter by the sun. So that kicks into play some very positive energies. And actually, those positive energies can be felt right now on the planet. Not that there isn't bad things happening. Of course, you know, I mean, there's room enough for everything on this planet, isn't there? And, you know, the good stuff doesn't stop, and neither does the bad stuff, unfortunately. But so we're looking at a conjunction, a transiting conjunction of sun, which is like kind of the, in a clock, it would be the minute minder, the minute hand, you know. And if there's a second, a clock that ticks off the seconds, that would be the moon. But anyway, so the sun in Scorpio approaching Jupiter. So that gives us a lovely conjunction. Let me see here what the astrology king says about this. Sun conjunct Jupiter, 26th of October, 2017. That's right. In just 2 days. Let's see. Sun, okay, celebrities, blah, blah, blah. Sun conjunct Jupiter transit. And you see, this is not just for us, because we can feel these energies, but this is for the whole, basically. So let's see here. Transiting Sun conjunct Jupiter is about the best of the solar transits, as it gives a general feeling of well-being, happiness, and optimism. Well, that's me all over. I mean, I could just, put me in a great big tablespoon and haul me out of here or something like that. I'm just feeling so happy, so optimistic or something like that. Good luck at this time can be seen as an opportunity for growth, personal, professional, and spiritual. You know, that's quite a bit, isn't it? Quite a bit. An opportunity for growth along all those lines. You should feel this as an urge or a strong desire to do all you can, experience everything to the fullest, just as you may be the beneficiary of compliments, gifts, or money. You will also be more generous and bubbly in nature. So, okay, so you may be the beneficiary of their compliments and gifts and money, and you likewise are liable to be more generous and bubbly in nature yourself. The keyword expansion applies to all areas of life, from relationships to wealth. This is an excellent time to begin new studies or long-distance travels. Hey, I know some people that are Scorpios that are traveling right now. New relationships, investments, or the beginning of any new projects are favored. Generally, things started now will turn out positively in the long run. Well, that's one of the uses of astrology is to pick a good time to start something. Let's start a new company. Let's name the company. Let's set up an account at the bank or PayPal or whatever for this company. Let's go out and buy a Bitcoin or two. You know, hope that timing is good. Well, really, I mean, if you were to buy stocks in a stock market, or if you were to sell stocks in a stock market, generally it would turn out that you have done that it was a good decision, that your timing had been good, and that you would profit from it if it's something that you initiate on a day when the sun is within 1 or 2 degrees of a conjunction with Jupiter. However, depending on other aspects or fixed star conjunctions, there are some potential negatives to be aware of with this transit. Uh-oh, I guess nothing is free, right? Okay, here's some negatives. The Jupiter tendency toward growth and expansion can equally apply to negative character traits such as boastfulness and greed. Remaining conscious of this potential for extravagance and waste will allow thoughtfulness and moderation to ensure you make the most of the many opportunities this transit brings. You know, there's always some do-gooder psychiatrist or something like that, you know, who has to sneak in some words of negativity. You know, that's a Saturn type of person that's kind of the very opposite of the bubbly and positive, jovial, and that's Jove as in Jupiter, kind of person that's indicated in this transit today. This interpretation for Sun conjunct Jupiter transit can be read for a solar eclipse and also a new moon conjunct Jupiter. Okay. So, you know, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And we have, what we have to thank for that is a guy by the name, well, his site is called Astrology King. Got a homepage, aspects, sun aspects, and today he's featuring sun conjunct Jupiter, and so am I. So Jupiter applies to things like business, success, investments. It could be real estate. It could be money market. It could be stocks. It could be gold and silver. It could be any number of things that hold value. But it can also be fun. It can be just sheer joy, the sheer joy and fun that people can have when they party hardy, you know, and without a negative aspect to it. So a negative aspect would be like if Mars or Uranus or Pluto was to join in to this, then there would be the potential for other things to take place. But just with Jupiter, no, with Jupiter, it's pretty positive all the way around. And that's what's in the heavens right now. I'm telling you, Sun conjunction Jupiter. So good day for travel, a good day for talking with people that are at great distances from you, since Jupiter often rules different parts of the country and different cities and even different groups of people that might be in distant countries. So Sun conjunction Jupiter is very good for the travel aspect. It would be probably good for diplomacy. It would probably be a positive planet to have a handshake over anything, signing agreements on a day like this. And there's no Mercury retrograde. There's no other things that would hold up, you know, the idea of having of this being an extremely, you know, positive combination of energies. Now, note, it's in 1, 2, 3 degrees of Scorpio, so the charts of the individuals whom this would benefit the most are people that have planets in the first, let's say, the first 4 or 5 degrees of Scorpio. I know somebody who does, actually, who's on the road right now making a coast-to-coast trip, and they're having the time of their life, so that's good. It fits in exactly with this, and they're going to have their birthday at think they're still going to be on the road, or maybe they'll be back home in Tucson. Not sure. It's going to be pretty close, a pretty close thing whether they'd be back home or not. So if you personally are in the early degrees of Scorpio, which would be, you know, 23, 24, 25, 26 of October, then there you go. You know, this is 27th, 28th, actually, right? 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th. Those dates of October for any birth, you know, would be highly positive right now. You'd have the sun making a solar return back to the place that where it was when you were born, and also Jupiter is holding forth. So, and what that does is it in a solar return, that indicates the whole year coming up is going to be positive then because of Jupiter's influence. And there's no negative influence that I see right now in that part of the chart. But there could be if your chart is different. If you were, you know, if you were born with, let's say, Mars or Pluto or something in a hard aspect, a tough aspect to this combination right now, then there could be some side effects. Let's just call side effects, you know. You're having this wonderful booster, this wonderful supplement to your life, Sun conjunct Jupiter. But if you have some planets that are like beaming down on it with some negative aspects, then that's a side effect you could worry about. But anyway, so if you're in Scorpio, that's early Scorpio, that's perfect for you. If you are in the early part of the signs of Cancer or of Pisces, those are the other two water signs. The water signs are compatible Scorpio. The signs that are two signs away from Scorpio, in other words, Virgo on one side and Capricorn on the other, that is a 60-degree aspect, and those would be mildly positively affected by this, if your sun is in that part of your chart, and if it's if you are born in the early part, not of Scorpio but of Taurus, that is the opposite sign, and opposites sometimes can be balancing act. You have a sun that's opposite this kind of aspect, then there's a balance to be had. It may work out, it may not. You know, how are you on teeter totters, and can you juggle things? You know, like the Two of Pentacles is a tarot card showing a juggler, someone who's doing a little balancing act along the seashore there. So that might come into play for you. And probably the hardest signs for this to work on are ones like, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Aquarius, and Leo. Aquarius and Leo, because those two signs are 90 degrees away. Like I know a Leo who just got back from a plane flight, and she has an unnaturally great amount of jet lag. And so why should she have jet lag now? Why should she have jet lag? Well, it's because, the planets are lining up in a way that's kind of a little bit stressful on her chart. Would not apply to everybody because everybody has a different chart, right? Everybody has different aspects. So we have to look at those one by one, case by case. And so Leo on one side, and the opposite side of Leo is Aquarius, and that is also at right angles to Scorpio. So the right angle thing, 90 degrees, three signs over, is tough, because that implies not just the balancing act that you have when you're opposite the sign, but it's more like it's a conflict. It generates conflicts. It's kind of like the two signs are grinding against each other, grinding away in a negative way. So it causes some stress. Sometimes people are born with a square in their charts between, let's say it's between Mars and Saturn. So Mars is the work energy, the work ethic, having a job. Saturn squaring it may mean that, you know, you never get along with bosses. Bosses never get along with you for very long. And, you know, you may enjoy your work, but it's like everything at that job, everything about the boss that you have, is getting in your way. And so therefore, rising to the top and getting the promotions and stuff is hard for you if you have certain kinds of squares and also conjunctions. Conjunction usually means that the two forces act together. If you have Mars and Saturn in a conjunction with each other, that's probably better than having them squaring each other from 90 degrees apart. So anyway, we could go into a host of different things that we can talk about astrology, but I wasn't really planning. I didn't really have anything planned about astrology. And I see that we have, right now, we still have no callers. And it's odd. I know that Freedomizer and Blog Talk Radio have been here for years and years and years, but I haven't. You know, this is my first year on the radio, and I've done maybe, 20, 25 of these 90-minute shows. And it's not enough to turn up an audience yet. Word has to get out there. People have to get, you know, motivated to call. And just to listen. This particular show has somehow been filed under the category Lifestyles. And somehow I think it's not getting as much attention as, for example, my 30-minute show, which is a psychic astrology show, which is under spirituality, something like that. Yeah. So why is that? Is that because more people know to tune in to shows that are about spirituality? Why? Because they're interested in spirituality. Hey, if they're listening to radio, if they're dipping into, you know, AM radio or a podcast or something like that, then they're really into that, into a subject. And it's an in-depth kind of interest. It could be metaphysics. There could be different kinds of metaphysics. People could have shows about being mediums and channelers and stuff like that, you know. People could suddenly, you know, be changing their voice, throwing their voice, and saying that, you know, that they're an entity. Well, I'm an entity, okay? Okay, get over yourself. I am an entity. But I'm not speaking through Ed. I am Ed. Unless somebody came in and did a walk, what do they call it, a walk-in, where somebody, a spirit, an entity, an alien presence, something, takes over, you know, just walks in, takes over somebody who's minding their own business. It could be a kid, a teenager, or an adult. No, that's not me. I mean, I know this is exactly how I've been for the last half a century, you know. I have not been taken over by unseen forces or anything like that. You know, Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, you know? I mean, where was he getting this stuff? He would lay back and go into kind of like a trance. You know, he may be sleeping, but, you know, maybe he's talking while he's sleeping. So he's not really asleep, but he's definitely in some kind of a self-induced trance. And then he gets, you know, this weird kind of, you know, information. Well, little Johnny, to get over his skin problem, he needs to have some warm milk, heat it up in a pan and mix it with some honey, and then apply it with a sponge to his face, you know, three times. I mean, you know, I'm kidding, but those were the kind of, you know, remedies. And so people would love remedies, right? They wanted to cure whatever was wrong with them, whatever was wrong with somebody in their family. Well, they would go to Edgar Cayce and he would ask him a question, and he would go into a trance, and this is what they would get. Sometimes I guess he slept the whole night, and then when he woke up, he would have the answer, you know, in hand to the question. So, gosh, he was very famous, you know, the Edgar Cayce Foundation. I think it made Virginia Beach, Virginia, you know, made it famous because they had the foundation there and everything. He himself has long passed away. But it wouldn't surprise me if somebody was channeling him, right? I mean, he was able to channel all this information from unseen sources. Well, maybe somebody should try channeling him. I don't know. My experience with channelers is a little bit chancy. I was friends with a husband and wife team. He would sort of direct things on stage, and she was the channeler. And I went to one of their demonstrations, and I realized near the middle of it that, oh my God, this was fake. It was conjured up. It was, oh my God. I just ran out practically from that. It was so disappointing. I had no idea that these people were blowing it like that. I mean, you know, there's so many opportunities to do good and to be honest and to be legitimate. There's no need for anyone to be bogus and pretend that they're channeling spirits and stuff like that. Oh, gosh, brings back bad memories. But anyway, where were we? Sun conjunct Jupiter. Okay, I think I've probably taken Sun conjunct Jupiter as far as I can. Let me go back to see what else is going on. Oh, you know, I was going to tinker with my exit music. I think right now it's in the morning and the evening. Ain't we got fun? You know that one? Oh, honey. Let's see. No money, but honey, don't we have fun? Bum, ba, bum, ba, bum. Oh, funny story there. For weeks and weeks and weeks, as the show has started and that thing is playing, then I, sitting right here, I tap along. And maybe I kind of hum along, and maybe I even, you know, make a sound effect or something at the right place in the song. And then I just realized this a while ago, that when I'm doing that, I'm not accounting for the fact that there's a time delay, that there's about between a little more than half a second, maybe three quarters of a second of a time delay. So so if I go da-da-da-da-da or something, or tap-tap-tap-tap-tap or something, whatever, it's going to fall absolutely guaranteed in the wrong place in the song as you're listening to it. And I'm just going to sound like an idiot. So I just want to say that is what that was all about. So I'm trying to restrain myself. I'm trying to restrain myself and not be, you know, so foolish. But, you know, I love music, too. I like rhythm. I got rhythm. Yeah, you know. And so anyway, I was thinking – I don't think I'll change the music for this show, but I'll probably change the music for my other show. I'll probably just change the exit music. And what I'll probably do is take just part of a song. Let's see. I wonder if I can go over to my keyboard. Oh, I'm trapped in a corner here. Somebody's going to have to come and rescue me. No, I'm okay. Trapped in a swiveling chair that won't move. Okay, here we go. Let me see if I can figure this out. I've never done this before on the air. Ba-bum-bum-bum. Garden in the moonlight, would you pardon me? Come tiptoe through the tulips with me. Something like that. It's you know, that song was popularized by Tiny Tim back in the 1960s. I think, you know, Tiny Tim, he had a very strange appearance. He had this beak of a huge nose, right? Huge schnozzle. And he would sing in a womanly kind of like a trill, like, and if I kiss you in the garden, you know, no, I'm not going to try to do it, but anyway, so he was famous, a famous guy. He was cool. He was on all the talk shows and variety shows, and he would play his little ukulele. So anyway, but so that's one of the songs he popularized. And I heard that in a 1929 movie, when it was they made a movie of a Broadway tune. It was a tune in a Broadway show, and it was just so cute. You know, there was just something so cute about it. And then I heard the same actor, the same singer, do that song again in about it was about 8 or 9 years later or something, in the late 1930s. And it was totally different, but again, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful rendition. It was kind of like a serenade where he was singing that to a woman who was sitting in a window, and she got more and more mobile and started dancing around. And she came and joined him in the garden, and there were like tulips in the garden and stuff. And it was just kind of cute. So that's like a song I kind of like. But we don't have to go there. We don't have to do that. One interesting thing that happened last week is I got about 750 or 800 occult books, occult and new age. Well, it said new age, but I don't know if they're really, if you could really say that they're all new age. Some of them are pretty old. Some of them are old age books. So let's see, I'm going to click on documents here and see what kind of things pop up. Let me change the settings on here so I can see the titles. View as a detailed list. Okay, that sounds good. And what do we have here? A lot of these are mine. How did this stuff get on here? Let's see, The Sacred Desert Womb Pool, short story, Voltaire's Candide, The Frugal Astrologer, Turn-Ons and Love Buttons. That's something that I wrote like 5 or 6 years ago. Kind of cute. It's like all kinds of different ways that people can please themselves and each other. And The Frugal Astrologer, that just goes through a whole bunch of different ways that somebody can save money. Like with food, or, you know, also there's stuff there on making money. Nature Spirits, Fixed Star Meanings, Gurdjieff's Philosophy of Nature, Uspensky Meets Gurdjieff, Chinese Western Astrology, Strangest Memories, who's that by? Let's see. Oh, Strangest Adventures, that makes more sense. Strangest Adventures of Ed August. Who's this guy? Ed August. Okay. So this is a book that I have written, but I have not published. It's about 300 pages long, and something that I started back in 2013, and I finished one version of it in 2013, but I'm still not finished with it. I'm still going to keep on going. Because the funny thing about this book is it's autobiography, and the first book is it's divided into three books. The first one was Stumbling Out of Darkness, and this has stuff from my childhood, and just strange memories. And in this book, as we go through this book, it turns out that there's about 30 instances or examples of like really weird stuff happening to me, stuff that could be, you know, ghosts. Some of it is definitely ghosts and supernatural. Some of it has more to do with maybe aliens from outer space, you know. Maybe some of it had to do with the strange solitary conditions of my childhood, where I was kept inside and all I could do is stare out the window at the world for weeks at a time, I think, you know, a breathtaking isolation. So let's see. Oh man, I'm really tormented here. I'm really conflicted because I'm not sure if I, you know, I don't think I can really get into this because it's, I'm really so sorry that I started something that I can't finish. Ouija board stories, contacts with the dead, meeting Lawrence Ferlinghetti, psychometry of objects, warnings of death, entering the psychedelic world, car attack, was it an angel crying that I heard? Yeah, one day I was minding my own business, I was about 19 years old or something like that, and I heard this crying. Has this ever happened to you, that you hear crying and it's like sobbing, coming at you? And it's like, well, where is it? You know, where was this, in the next room? It sounded like in the next room. Walk through the whole house. There's no source of it. Look outside. There's no source of it outside either. And it was just weird. It was just, I attribute it to like an angel, maybe some kind of, you know, my own personal angel or something like that was having a bad day. or I know, they were giving up on me. My protective angel was giving up on Ed August and going to go on somewhere else. Huh? So anyway, Metaphysical Town Hall was a place in San Francisco where I didn't really attend a school there, but I just went up there and learned a few things from the people that were very notable and professional astrologers and psychics. Big Sur Folk Festival, Shiva Dancing Tarot Sisters. Well, that was in San Francisco. I lived there during the Summer of Love. I actually had a job at the Bank of America down at the foot of Knob Hill, right where the cable car turnaround is. There was a bank. There still is a Bank of America there, I think. And anyway, they hired me just for the summer because there was a stock split. It was some kind of amalgamation between the Foremost and McKesson corporations, and people were sending in their stock shares, and somebody was supposed to stamp them and count them and all that stuff. So I was one of about 20 people that they hired. And I met this one lady who lived up the hill on Knob Hill and went up there, and across from where her room was in this, like a rooming house, was these two sisters who exclusively were interested in the tarot. Their door was open all the time, and they were doing tarot readings for each other and for anybody else that came along. And while one of them was doing the tarot readings, the other one very often would do what I call Shiva dancing. It was like dancing like in the Indian style of kind of like of the god Shiva, you know, with the hands and the legs all over the place and stuff. It was just very weird. It was, as I say, it was the Summer of Love. And I began to learn tarot. And there's a guy from Montreal there who was a magician. I mean, not a magician, like a stage magician, but he was actually like a magus, an M-A-G-U-S, a magus, Not to be confused with MAGA and Make America Great Again. That was something totally different. But anyway, and he taught me, he just sort of like picked me out. And he said, hey, you know, hey, have you ever seen this? Have you ever heard of this? This is what I did. This is blah, blah, blah. Here is a symbol that has a lot of power. It's a symbol that is extremely powerful in the universe. Nobody knows that it is, or if they do, they don't talk about it, but here it is. So he told me about this symbol, and I tried it, and I found that my social life improved about 250%, whatever. And then I met the professor emeritus, who's already had retired, and he was he had knowledge of Albert Einstein, who had died about 12 years earlier, and he was living in San Jose. Anyway, this is after that summer was over, and he had me work for him with editing and typing up manuscripts and stuff that he was writing about the First World War and also about Einstein. He told me some stories about Einstein, kind of funny. You know, he was playing his violin and stuff, you know. Nobody could stand it. But he had some autographed books by him and everything. And let's see, so one of them came out called The Holocaust, but he wasn't referring to the Jewish Holocaust. He was talking about the First World War as a Holocaust. And he finally passed away in the 1990s sometime, but he was a very interesting guy. Wilhelm Hermanns, Hermanns, and he was an interesting guy to know. I was 18 or 19, and he was like 72 or 74 or something like that. Yeah, he had all kinds of interesting sayings. What's one of his sayings? He says, remember, Ed, that seven men cannot wear out one woman, but one woman can wear out seven men. That's a terrible German accent. I used to have the ability to talk with a German accent, but that wasn't it. So anyway, then at that time, sometime around then, I started going to a spiritualist church also, just enough to learn some of the methods. We'd sit around in the dark, up on the second floor, in the dark, on a circle of chairs, and we would sort of like try to tune in on each other and just say the first thing that pops up in your mind when you think of somebody. That was interesting. So, you know what I'm doing is I'm just dipping into the first chapter of this autobiography, which is Strangest Adventures of Ed August. Yeah, I've got to release that. I think that would be fun. I've got to release that book. Let me see if I can get out of this chair and get back to where I was, and then I can see if I have any callers or what the heck is going on out here. Dip into a totally different subject matter now, which is possibly literary. Let's see. No, it doesn't look like it doesn't look like anybody's called in. But anyway, what's interesting is during the last week or 10 days, I've done some things with books. I have a lot of books in this house or apartment, and they're not doing me any good, so to speak. And so I'm kind of curious. Maybe I could put them on the market. So I belong to Biblio.com. I've been with Biblio for probably 10 years, and I've had books and then moved or something and, you know, no longer have the books and stuff. Oh, so now I have the books. Why isn't it giving me a list? Oh, there's the list. Oh, okay, here we go. So let's see. So these are just books that I put up on Biblio in the last week or so. A lot of them are anthropology and archaeology. I don't want to bore you. I don't want to bore you with stuff, but they range. There's a few, there's just an amazing range of books. The Death of an Ardent Bibliophile, Kierkegaard, The Cripple, Peter the Great and the Ottoman Empire, The Biltmore Estate, House, Gardens, and Winery, The Nazi Dictatorship, The Cadiz Experiment in Central America, 1808 to 1826, books exhibited at the 26th California International Antiquarian Book Fair, The Knot Book, it's a book about knots, Quest for Victory, Selected Poems of Robert Frost, Theocritus, Volume 2, Complete Diving, Getting Started with Geographic Informational Systems, Early Ordovician Trilobite Faunas of the Boat Harbor and Kotopke Formations, St. George Group in the Boat Harbor, Cape Norman area, Great Northern Peninsula, Western Newfoundland. So it's a whole book about trilobites that were found in Western Newfoundland. Oh boy, I can see this is a mistake because there's no way that I can make this interesting. A Manual of Obstetrical and Gynecological Pathology, The Triumph of the Teapot Poet, The Misfits, A Study of Sexual Outsiders, The Reed Organ, How to Give It the Proper Care, With a Great Master in India, How to Communicate with Spirits, Between Planets, New Harmonic Devices, The Parker Prosperity Program, Military Intelligence Blunders, Susie's Sun Signs, The 12th House, Essays on the Intellect, The Serpent of Lilith, Revolution Now, Eros the Slayer, Bored with the Rings. You've heard of Lord with the Rings? There's Bored with the Rings. Oscar Wilde, His Life and Confessions, The Rotary Cement Kiln, The Writing on the Wall, United States Arctic Interests, Indian Astrology, Mundane Astrology, The Lexicon of Homeric Dialect, Never in Anger, A Portrait of an Eskimo City, Hunter and Habitat in the Center Kalahari Desert, Rio de Janeiro and Environs, and that's a travel book from 1939, The Snake Pit, that's a novel about someone who ended up in a mental institution, Introduction to the Zombie Test, Theory and Practice, that's a psychological test, Transits of Venus, that's astrological, Thule Eskimo Culture, The Prehistory of Saglac Bay, Labrador, Archaic and Paleo-Eskimo Occupations, Alaska Voyage, 1881-1883. You see, there's lots of stuff in there about the Arctic, from Newfoundland over to Alaska. That's quite a ways. It crosses like 5 or 6 time zones. The Grand Peregrination, An Essay in Didactic Reminiscence, Tertium Organum, The Third Canon of Thought, A Key to the Enigmas of the World. That's by P.D. Ouspensky. That's one of these books. Like, oh, you have to have that book. Yeah, that's very, very new age to have Tertium Organum. I looked at it. It's very hard to make anything out in it, and it doesn't have an index, so you can't even look up something once you read it. I wanted to see in that book, if he mentions his buddy Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff was a very strange character who in the first half of last century and had a hypnotic effect on his followers and would spend, you know, days having dance sessions out in the woods or stuff like that. Just a very strange guy. And he influenced P.D. Ouspensky the same way that Freud influenced Jung, Carl Jung. Simplified Scientific Astrology, Consciousness and Reality, The Human Pivot Point. Okay, so what I've done is I researched, looked up, priced, typed out 140 new books this past week, and takes me at least 20 minutes to do one book because I've got to look it up, and then I've got to type in to look it up, and then when I look it up, then I decide, okay, is it, which of these books, is it like is this good one, this fine one, this, you know, different books of different qualities with different things wrong with them or whatever, and figure out what the value is. And because I want to use a fair value. I want to give a person a fair value. So that is that. So I'm going to go back to the Blog Talk Radio page. And let me see if I can't find where is my audio clips. Let's see. Let me put on here. I'm going to search for where my audio clips are because they include. Okay, let me see. This is a little complicated because I've got to type some letters, some secret code in here. Let's see if it'll do it or not. I hope so. At August World. Okay, that's cool. That's cool. The reason I was looking for that is because there's a suite of commercials. I got to do this, guys. I'm sorry. I'll be back. When we get back, I'll have a whole new topic, a whole new topic to open up. I also want to read a story to you. So here we go. I'll be back in 3 minutes.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to wefunder.com/groundswellcard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits like eating wholesome foods, and with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Imagine standing barefoot on cushy grass while you use a professional-grade knife to deftly chop fresh vegetables on your organic bamboo cutting board. The team at MyZestiness.com wants to help your family enjoy home cooking like this more often. They do this by offering fun and functional tools that make your time in the kitchen more efficient and enjoyable. MyZestiness.com offers the finest and most interesting kitchen goods and accessories, all backed by their world-class customer service team. Check out their ever-expanding inventory today. Visit MyZestiness.com. That's zesty like spicy, nest like home. MyZestiness.com.
Wow, that 3 minutes went pretty fast. So I'm looking through my Kindle. Now, what I did is instead of buying a $100, you know, Kindle Fire or, you know, any of those actual pieces of hardware, I just went to the Play Store and I downloaded a Kindle app. And so I've been able to take advantage of having some great reading material here. For example, I just got a book on... J.R.R. Tolkien, author of the century by T.A. Shippey. And that's kind of cool, but, you know, I'm trying to get... Okay, that's... There we go. Let's see if I can get off of this thing entirely. I want to get to some different book. Library... Home. Ah, that's good. sometimes I get on one of these books and I don't know how to get off of that. So here are some recent books that I downloaded. And very, very many of these I get for 99 cents. Some I get for free. Marked by Fate, Coral Sea, 1942. Deader Homes and Gardens, that's a mystery book. Self-Portraits, Fictions. Fairy Realms, Daddy Realms. Beyond Dead. The Magnificent Medals, that's a family of newspaper men. In the Shadows of Victory, Suicide Force, Famous Trials, Artifact, Daughter of Earth and Water, Clive Barker's Weave World, Algernon Blackwood's Collected Works. Oh, man, Algernon Blackwood is pretty darn cool. Let's see if I can find the Wendigo one here. I read The Willows. I read The Willows, but I have not read... Oh, come on, guys. They got to get me back to page one of the section. The Insanity of Jones? What the hell is that about? Okay. I didn't realize that there would be such a problem. Oh, okay. Read now. Well, I would read it if I could start from the beginning. They don't want to let me start from the beginning. I hate it. Oh, no. Oh, now I switched it up the page. I kind of just, you know, kind of pushed it with my finger, and now it's gone from the page. Go back to the Kindle one more time and see what I can find. Back to where? Where do I go back to? Insanity of Jones. Let's see. I'm trying to sort my way. The Willows. That's the one that I read, was The Willows. Looks like it's about 120 pages. Max Hensing, bacteriologist and murderer? What the hell is that? So Algernon, The Listener, and other stories. The Listener. September 4th. I have hunted all over London for rooms suited to my income, £120 a year, and have, what is that? That's, I guess that's about $500 back in those days. By the way, those days, that would be like the 1890s or so. That's when Algernon Blackwood was writing. September 4th, I've hunted all over London for rooms suited to my income, £120 a year, and have at last found them. Two rooms without modern conveniences, it is true. I guess that means they have no bathroom. And in an old ramshackle building, but within a stone's throw of P-Place. He doesn't want to say what the name of it is, so he uses a letter P with a dash behind it. And in an eminently respectable street, the rent is only £25 a year. That's not bad. He's making £120 a year, and his rent is going to be £25 a year. We should be so lucky, right? I had begun to despair when at last I found them by chance. The chance was a mere chance and unworthy a record. I had to sign a lease for a year, and I did so willingly. The furniture from my old place in Hampshire, which has been stored so long, will just suit them. October 1st. Here I am in my two rooms in the center of London, and not far from the offices of the periodicals, where occasionally I dispose of an article or two. The building is at the end of a cul-de-sac. The alley is well paved and clean and lined, chiefly with the backs of sedate and institutional-looking buildings. There is a stable in it. A stable? Oh, okay. This is back in the days when people used horses. My own house is dignified with the title of Chambers. The honor must prove too much for it, and it will swell with pride and fall asunder. It is very old. The floor of my sitting room has valleys and low hills on it, and the top of the door slants away from the ceiling with a glorious disregard of what is usual. They must have quarreled 50 years ago and have been going apart ever since. October 2nd. My landlady is old and thin with a faded, dusty face. Dusty face. Take her in a bathroom and get a cloth or a rag or something and get the dust off her face. My God, it's People should not be going around if they have dust on their face. She is uncommunicative. The few words that she utters seem to cause her pain. Probably her lungs are half choked with dust. She keeps my rooms as free from this commodity as possible and has the assistance of a strong girl who brings up the breakfast and lights the fire. Hey, that's a pretty good situation for this guy, huh? He calls her a strong girl who brings up his breakfast and lights the fire. That's a pretty good deal for £25 a month. Or is it a year? I guess a month. As I have said already, she is not communicative. Well, maybe the young girl who brings him breakfast every morning and lights the fire, maybe she is more communicative, huh? In reply to pleasant efforts on my part, she informed me briefly that I was the only occupant of the house at present. My rooms had not been occupied for some years. There had been other gentlemen upstairs, but they had left. She never looks straight at me when she speaks, but fixes her dim eyes on my middle waistcoat button till I get nervous and begin to think it isn't on straight or it's the wrong sort of button altogether. October 8th. My week's book is nicely kept and so far is reasonable. Milk and sugar, 7D. You know, I don't know the old, there's new English money and there's old English money, which is like it's, I don't know what D stands for, I really don't. Bread, 60, butter, 80, marmalade, 60, eggs, 1 shilling, 8D. Ah, so D is smaller than a shilling. And of course, a shilling is less than a pound. Laundress, 2 shillings, 9D. Oil, 60s. Attendance, 5 shillings. What is attendance? What is that? Attendance, 5 shillings. Total, 12 shillings, 2D. This landlady has a son who she told me is something of a homnibus. He comes occasionally to see her. I think he drinks, for he talks very loud, regardless of the hour of the day or night, and tumbles about over the furniture downstairs. You imagine somebody that just tumbles around on the furniture. What a character, huh? You don't think of the Victorians or Edwardians doing things like that, because, of course, they're such proper Britishers, you know. All the morning I sit indoors writing articles, verses for the comic papers, a novel I've been at for 3 years, and concerning which I have dreams. A children's book in which the imagination has free rein, and another book which is to last as long as myself, since it is an honest record of my soul's advance or retreat in the struggle of life. Besides these, I keep a book of poems which I use as a safety valve, and concerning which I have no dreams whatsoever. That's right, people who poems soon, you know, give up the idea that anything serious is going to ever happen with their poetry. I sure did. Between the lot, I'm always occupied. In the afternoons, I generally try to take a walk for my health's sake to Regent's Park, into Kensington Gardens, or farther afield to Hampstead Heath. October 10th. Everything went wrong today. I have 2 eggs for breakfast. This morning, one of them was bad. I rang the bell for Emily. When she came in, I was reading the paper, and without looking up, I said, "Egg's bad." "Oh, is it, sir?" she said. "I'll get another one," and went out, taking the egg with her. I waited my breakfast for her return, which was in 5 minutes. She put the new egg on the table and went away, but when I looked down, I saw that she had taken away the good egg and left the bad one, all green and yellow, in the slop basin. I rang again. "You've taken the wrong egg," I said. "Oh," she explained, "I thought the one I took down didn't smell so very bad." In due time, she returned with a good egg, and I resumed my breakfast with 2 eggs, but less appetite. It was all very trivial, to be sure, but so stupid that I felt annoyed. The character of that egg influenced everything I did. I wrote a bad article and tore it up. I got a bad headache. I used bad words to myself. Everything was bad, so I chucked work and went for a long walk. I dined at a cheap chop house on my way back and reached home about 9 o'clock. Rain was just beginning to fall as I came in, and the wind was rising. It promised an ugly night. The alley looked dismal and dreary, and the hall of the house, as I passed through it, felt chilly as a tomb. It was the first stormy night I experienced in my new quarters. The drafts were awful. They came crisscross, met in the middle of the room, and formed eddies and whirlpools and cold, silent currents that almost lifted the hair of my head. I stuffed up the sashes of the windows with neckties and odd socks and sat over the smoky fire to keep warm. First I tried to write, but found it too cold. My hand turned to ice on the paper. What tricks the wind did play with the old place. It came rushing up the forsaken alley with a sound like the feet of a hurrying crowd of people who stopped suddenly at the door. I felt as if a lot of curious folk had arranged themselves just outside and were staring up at my windows. Then they took to their heels again and fled, whispering and laughing down the lane, only, however, to return with the next gust of wind and repeat this impertinence. On the other side of my room, a single square window opens into a sort of shaft or well that measures about 6 feet across to the back wall of another house. Down this funnel, the wind dropped and puffed and shouted. Such noises I have never heard before. Between the two entertainments, I sat over the fire in my greatcoat listening to the deep booming of the chimney. It was like being in a ship at sea, and I almost looked for the floor to rise in undulations and rock to and fro. October 12th. I wish I were not quite so lonely and so poor, and yet I love both my loneliness and my poverty. The former makes me appreciate the companionship of the wind and the rain, while the latter preserves my liver and prevents me wasting time in dancing attendance upon women. Poor, ill-dressed men are not acceptable attendants. My parents are dead, and my only sister is, no, not dead exactly, but married to a very rich man. They travel most of the time, he to find his health, she to lose herself. Through sheer neglect on her part, she has long passed out of my life. The door closed when, after an absolute silence of 5 years, she sent me a check for £50 at Christmas. It was signed by her husband. I returned it to her in 1,000 pieces and in an unstamped envelope. So at least I had the satisfaction of knowing that it cost her something. She wrote back with a broad quill pen that covered a whole page with 3 lines. You are evidently as cracked as ever and rude and ungrateful in the bargain, unquote. It had always been my special terror lest the insanity of my father's family should leap across the generations and appear in me. This thought haunted me, and she knew it. So after this little exchange of civilities, the door slammed, never to open again. I heard the crash it made, and with it the falling from the walls of my heart of many little bits of china with their own peculiar value, rare china, some of it, that only needed dusting. The same walls, too, carried mirrors in which I used sometimes to see reflected the misty lawns of childhood, the daisy chains, the wind-torn blossoms scattered through the orchard by warm rains, the robber's cave in the long walk, and the hidden store of apples in the hayloft. She was my inseparable companion then, but when the door slammed, the mirrors cracked across their entire length, and the visions they held vanished forever. Now I am quite alone. At 40, one cannot begin all over again to build up careful friendships, and all others are comparatively worthless. October 14th. My bedroom is 10 by 10. It is below the level of the front room, and a step leads down into it. Both rooms are very quiet on calm nights, for there is no traffic down this forsaken alleyway. In spite of the occasional larks of the wind, it is a most sheltered strip. At its upper end, below my window, all the cats of the neighborhood congregate as soon as darkness gathers. They lie undisturbed on the long ledge of a blind window of the opposite building, for after the postman has come and gone at 9:30, no footfalls ever dare to interrupt their sinister conclave. No step but my own, or sometimes the unsteady footfall of the son who is, quote, something of a omnibus, unquote. I don't understand that remark. An omnibus, well, that's a London bus, right? So he is like an omnibus. I don't get it. October 15th, I dined at the ABC shop on poached eggs and coffee and then went for a stroll around the outer edge of Regent's Park. It was 10 o'clock when I got home. I counted no less than 13 cats, all of a dark color, crouching under the lee side of the alley walls. It was a cold night, and the stars shone like points of ice in a blue-black sky. The cats turned their heads and stared at me in silence as I passed. An odd sensation of shyness took possession of me under the glare of so many pairs of unblinking eyes. As I fumbled with the latch key, they jumped noiselessly down and pressed against my legs as if anxious to be let in. But I slammed the door in their faces and ran quickly upstairs. The front room, as I entered to grope for the matches, felt as cold as a stone vault. And the air held an unusual dampness. October 17th. For several days, I have been working on a ponderous article that allows no play for the fancy. My imagination requires a judicious rein. I'm afraid to let it loose, for it carries me sometimes into appalling places beyond the stars and beneath the world. No one realizes the danger more than I do. But what a foolish thing to write here, for there's no one to know, no one to realize. My mind of late has had unusual thoughts I've never had before, about medicines and drugs and the treatment of strange illnesses. I cannot imagine their source. At no time in my life have I dwelt upon such ideas now constantly thronging my brain. I've had no exercise lately, for the weather has been shocking, and all my afternoons have been spent in the reading room of the British Museum, where I have a reader's ticket. I've made an unpleasant discovery. There are rats in the house. At night from my bed, I've heard them scampering across the hills and valleys of the front room, and my sleep has been a good deal disturbed in consequence. October 19th. The landlady, I find, has a little boy with her, probably her son's child. In fine weather, he plays in the alley and draws a wooden cart over the cobbles. One of the wheels is off, and it makes the most distracting noise. After putting up with it as long as possible, I found it was getting on my nerves, and I could not write, so I rang the bell. Emily answered it. Emily, will you ask the little fellow to make less noise? It's impossible to work. The girl went downstairs, and soon afterwards the child was called in by the kitchen door. I felt rather a brute for spoiling his play. In a few minutes, however, the noise began again, and I felt that he was a brute. He dragged the broken toy with a string over the stones till the rattling noise jarred every nerve in my body. It became unbearable, and I rang the bell a second time. That noise must be put a stop to, I said to the girl with decision. Yes, sir, she grinned. I know, but one of the wheels is off. The man in the stable offered to mend it for him, but he wouldn't let them. He says he likes it that way. I can't help what he likes. The noise must stop. I can't write. Yes, sir, I'll call Mrs. Monson. The noise stopped for the day then. October 23rd. Every day for the past week, that cart has rattled over the stones till I have come to think of it as a huge carrier's van with four wheels and two horses, and every morning I've been obliged to ring the bell and have it stopped. The last time Mrs. Monson herself came up and said she was sorry I had been annoyed. The sound should not occur again. With rare discursiveness, she went on to ask if I was comfortable and how I liked the rooms. I replied cautiously. I mentioned the rats. She said they were mice. I spoke of the drafts. She said, oh, yes, it were a drafty house. I referred to the cats, and she said they had been as long as she could remember. By way of conclusion, she informed me that the house was over 200 years old, and that the last gentleman who had occupied my rooms was a painter who, quote, had real Jimmy Bueys and Raffles hanging all over the walls, unquote. It took me some moments to discern that Cimabue and Raphael were what was in the woman's mind. Raffles instead of Raphael's. October 24th. Last night, the son, who is something of an omnibus, came in. He had evidently been drinking, for I heard loud and angry voices below in the kitchen long after I'd gone to bed. Once, too, I caught the singular words rising up to me through the floor. Burning from the top to the bottom is the only thing that will make this house right. I knocked on the floor and the voices ceased suddenly, though later I again heard their clamor in my dreams. These rooms are very quiet, almost too quiet sometimes. On windless nights they are as silent as the grave, and the house might be miles off in the country. The roar of London's traffic reaches me only in heavy, distant vibrations. It holds an ominous note sometimes, like that of an approaching army, or an immense tidal wave very far away, thundering in the night. October 27th. Mrs. Monson, though admirably silent, is a foolish, fussy woman. She does such stupid things. in dusting the room, she put all my things in the wrong places. The ashtrays, which should be on the writing table, she sets in a silly row on the mantelpiece. The pen tray, which should be beside the inkstand, she hides away cleverly among the books on my reading desk. My gloves she arranges daily in idiotic array upon a half-filled bookshelf, and I always have to rearrange them on the low table by the door. She places my armchair at impossible angles between the fire and the light. And the tablecloth, the one with Trinity Hall stains, she puts on the table in such a fashion that when I look at it, I feel as if my tie and all my clothes were on crooked and awry. She exasperates me. Her very silence and meekness are irritating. Sometimes I feel inclined to throw the inkstand at her just to bring an expression into her watery eyes and a squeak from those colorless lips. Dear me, what violent expressions I'm making use of. How very foolish of me. And yet it almost seems as if the words were not my own, but had been spoken into my ear. I mean, I never make use of such terms, naturally. October 30th. I've been here a month. The place does not agree with me, I think. My headaches are more frequent and violent, and my nerves are a perpetual source of discomfort and annoyance. I have conceived a great dislike for Mrs. Monson, a feeling I'm certain she reciprocates. Somehow the impression comes frequently to me that there are goings-on in this house of which I know nothing and which she is careful to hide from me. Last night her son slept in the house, and this morning as I was standing at the window I saw him go out. He glanced up and caught my eye. It was a loutish figure and singularly repulsive face that I saw, and he gave me the benefit of a very unpleasant leer, at least so I imagine. Evidently, I'm getting absurdly sensitive to trifles, and I suppose it is my disordered nerves making themselves felt. In the British Museum this afternoon, I noticed several people at the reader's table staring at me and watching every move I made. Whenever I looked up from my books, I found their eyes upon me. It seemed to me unnecessary and unpleasant, and I left earlier than was my custom. When I reached the door, I threw back a last look into the room and saw every head at the table turned in my direction. It annoyed me very much, and yet I know it is foolish to take note of such things. When I am well, they pass me by. I must get more regular exercise. Of late, I have next to none. November 2nd. The utter stillness of this house is beginning to oppress me. I wish there were other fellows living upstairs. No footsteps ever sound overhead, and no tread ever passes my door to go up the next flight of stairs. I'm beginning to feel some curiosity to go up myself and see what the upper rooms are like. I feel lonely here and isolated, swept into a deserted corner of the world and forgotten. Once I actually caught myself gazing into the long, cracked mirrors, trying to see the sunlight dancing beneath the trees in the orchard, but only deep shadows seem to congregate there now, and I soon desisted. It has been very dark all day, and no wind stirring. The fogs have begun. I had to use a reading lamp all this morning. There was no cart to be heard today. I actually missed it. This morning, in the gloom and silence, I think I could almost have welcomed it. After all, the sound is a very human one, and this empty house at the end of the alley holds other noises that are not quite so satisfactory. I have never once seen a policeman in the lane, and the postmen always hurry out with no evidence of a desire to loiter. 10 p.m. As I write this, I hear no sound but the deep murmur of the distant traffic and the low sighing of the wind. The two sounds melt into one another. Now and again, a cat raises its shrill, uncanny cry upon the darkness. The cats are always there under my windows when the darkness falls. The wind is dropping into the funnel with a noise like the sudden sweeping of immense distant wings. It is a dreary night. I felt lost and forgotten. November 3rd. From my windows, I can see arrivals. When anyone comes to the door, I can just see the hat and shoulders and the hand on the bell. Only two fellows have been to see me since I came here 2 months ago. Both of them I saw from the window before they came up and heard their voices asking if I was in. Neither of them ever came back. I finished a ponderous article On reading it through, however, I was dissatisfied with it and drew my pencil through almost every page. There were strange expressions and ideas that I could not explain and viewed with amazement, not to say alarm. They did not sound like my very own, and I could not remember having written them. Can it be that my memory is beginning to be affected? My pens are never to be found. That stupid old woman puts them in a different place every day. I must give her due credit for finding so many new hiding places. Such ingenuity is wonderful. I've told her repeatedly, but she always says, I'll speak to Emily, sir. Emily always says, I'll tell Mrs. Monson, sir. Their foolishness makes me irritable and scatters all my thoughts. I should like to stick the lost pens into them and turn them out blind-eyed to be scratched and mauled by those thousand hungry cats. Phew, what a ghastly thought. Where in the world did that come from? Such an idea is no more my own than it is the policeman. Yet I felt I had to write it. It was like a voice singing in my head, and my pen wouldn't stop till the last word was finished. What ridiculous nonsense. I must and will restrain myself. I must take more regular exercise. My nerves and liver plague me horribly. November 4th. I attended a curious lecture in the French Quarter on death, but the room was so hot and I was so weary that I fell asleep. The only part I heard, however, touched my imagination vividly. Speaking of suicides, the lecturer said that self-murder was no escape from the miseries of the present, but only a preparation of greater sorrow for the future. Suicides, he declared, cannot shirk their responsibilities so easily. They must return to take up life exactly where they laid it so violently down, but with the added pain and punishment of their weakness. Many of them wander the earth in unspeakable misery till they can reclothe themselves in the body of someone else, generally a lunatic or weak-minded person who cannot resist the hideous obsession. This is their only means of escape. Surely a weird and horrible idea. I wish I had slept all the time and not heard it at all. My mind is morbid enough without such ghastly fancies. Such mischievous propaganda should be stopped by the police. I'll write to the Times and suggest it. Good idea. I walked home through Soho and imagined that 100 years had slipped back into place, and De Quincey was still there, haunting the night with invocations to his just, subtle, and mighty drug. His vast dreams seemed to hover not very far away. Once started in my brain, the pictures refused to go away, and I saw him sleeping in that cold, tenantless mansion with the strange little waif who was afraid of its ghosts, both together in the shadows under a single horseman's cloak, or wandering in the companionship of the spectral Anne, or later still on his way to the eternal rendezvous at the foot of Great Titchfield Street, the rendezvous she never was able to keep. What an unutterable gloom, what an untold horror of sorrow and suffering comes over me as I try to realize something of what that man, boy he then was, must have taken into his lonely heart. As I came up the alley, I saw a light in the top window and a head and shoulders thrown in an exaggerated shadow upon the blind. I wonder what the sun could be doing up there at such an hour. November 5th. This morning, while writing, someone came up the creaking stairs and knocked cautiously at my door. Thinking it was the landlady, I said, "Come in." The knock was repeated, and I cried louder, "Come in, come in," but no one turned the handle, and I continued my writing with a vexed, "Well, stay out then," under my breath. Went on writing? I tried to, but my thoughts had suddenly dried up at their source. I could not set down a single word. It was a dark, yellow fog morning, and there was little enough inspiration in the air as it was, but that stupid woman standing just outside my door, waiting to be told again to come in, roused the spirit of vexation that filled my head to the exclusion of all else. At last, I jumped up and opened the door myself. "What do you want, and why in the world don't you come in?" I cried up, but the words dropped into empty air. There was no one there. The fog poured up the dingy staircase in deep yellow coils, but there was no sign of a human being anywhere. I slammed the door with imprecations upon the house and its noises and went back to my work. A few minutes later, Emily came in with a letter. "Were you or Mrs. Monson outside a few minutes ago knocking at my door?" "No, sir." "Are you sure?" "Mrs. Monson's gone to market, and there's no one but me and the child in the old house. and I've been washing the dishes for at least the last hour, sir. I fancied the girl's face turned a shade paler. She fidgeted toward the door with a glance over her shoulder. Wait, Emily, I said, and then told her what I had heard. She stared stupidly at me, though her eyes shifted now and then over the articles in the room. Who was it? I asked when I had come to the end. Mrs. Monson says it's only mice, she said, as if repeating a learned lesson. Mice, I exclaimed, it's nothing of the sort. Someone was feeling about outside my door. Who was it? Is the son in the house? Her whole manner changed suddenly, and she became earnest instead of evasive. She seemed anxious to tell the truth. Oh, no, sir, there's no one in the house at all but you and me and the child, and there couldn't have been nobody at your door. As for them knocks, she stopped abruptly as though she had said too much. Well, what about the knocks? I said more gently. Of course, she stammered, the knocks isn't mice, nor the footsteps neither. But then, again, she came to a full halt. Anything wrong with the house? Lord, no, sir. The drains is splendid. I don't mean drains, girl. I mean, did anything bad ever happen here? She flushed up to the roots of her hair and then turned suddenly pale again. She was obviously in considerable distress, and there was something she was anxious yet afraid to tell, some forbidden thing she was not allowed to mention. I don't mind what it was, only I should like... Oh, pardon me, it was him speaking. I don't mind what it was, only I should like to know, I said encouragingly. Raising her frightened eyes to my face, she began to blurt out something about that which happened once to a gentleman that lived upstairs, when a shrill voice calling her name sounded below. Emily! Emily! It was the returning landlady, and the girl tumbled downstairs as if pulled backwards by a rope, leaving me full of conjectures as to what in the world could have happened to a gentleman upstairs that could in so curious a manner affect my life downstairs. November 10th. I have done capital work, have finished the Pondus article, and had it accepted for review, and another one ordered. I feel well and cheerful, and have had regular exercise and good sleep. No headaches, no nerves, no liver. Those pills the chemist recommended are wonderful. I can watch the child playing with his cart and feel no annoyance. Sometimes I almost feel inclined to join him. Even the gray-faced landlady rouses pity in me. I'm sorry for her, so worn, so weary, so oddly put together. Just like the building, she looks as if she had once suffered some shock of terror and was momentarily dreading another. When I spoke to her today very gently about not putting the pens in the ashtray and the gloves on the hook shelf, she raised her faint eyes to mine for the first time and said with the ghost of a smile, "I'll try and remember, sir." I felt inclined to pat her on the back and say, "Come, cheer up and be jolly. Life's not so bad after all." "Oh, I am much better. There's nothing like open air and success and good sleep. They build up, as if by magic, the portions of the heart eaten down by despair and unsatisfied yearnings. Even to the cats I feel friendly. When I came in at 11 o'clock tonight, they followed me to the door in a stream, and I stooped down to stroke the one nearest to me. Bah, the brute hissed and spat and struck at me with her paws. The claw caught my hand and drew blood in a thin line. The others danced sideways into the darkness, screeching as though I had done them an injury. I believe these cats really hate me. Perhaps they are only waiting to be reinforced. Then they will attack me. Ha ha, in spite of the momentary annoyance, this fancy sent me laughing upstairs to my room. So here we run halfway in this story. And you know, I think I'd better pull up right here because I need to do another passel of a little commercial break, a few commercials, and I'll be back in a moment. Thank you.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here. The check originally was $120. With the save around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? Join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time, to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal radio show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Well, this 90 minutes that we have just goes by so quickly, and I just hope that you enjoy listening to me reading things and talking about things on here. How is the rest of the week going to be? Let me take a card at random from my Ed August's Tarot, which is a 235-card tarot deck. Actually, it's an image deck. It has, somebody is being freed up. Anybody out there that's worried about a divorce, that's worried about a separation, it's going to be a happy situation. I see a happy situation because freedom is so important. By the way, remember, this is Freedomizer Radio. It's all about freedom. That two people, their chains have been released and they're able to rush off in different directions because suddenly there's this positive energy going on. Positive energy, charisma, beauty, sensitivity, the combinations of Mars and Venus, all kinds of positive things. Hey, this is good. Remember at the start of the show, I was talking about Sun conjunction Jupiter. Take advantage of it. And I'll be back here on Friday, same time, same station. Look for me also on Blog Talk Radio, Ed August, Psychic Astrologer. All righty. Where's my exit music? I don't see my exit music, so I'll play Blackbird Bye Bye. Thanks, folks. Oh, bye, bye, Blackbird. Nobody waits. No one can understand me. Oh, what hard love stories they all hand me. But make my bed and light the light. I'll arrive late tonight. Blackbird, bye-bye. Blackbird, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Pack up all my cares and woes.
Chandler.
Here I go, singing low. Bye, bye,
bye. Okay, thanks so much. See you soon. Love you. Bye.